Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, your ADHD information station where we help those with ADHD pay attention to attention, with your host, ADHD and attention coach, Jeff Copper.
Welcome, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, ADHD and attention coach, Jeff Copper, and tonight we're talking about ADHD and motivation. And with us in our virtual studio is Dr. Ari Tuchman. Real quickly, tonight is Wednesday, December the 21st in the year 2016 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'd like to thank Linda Rogley and Terry Maitland for the invitation to participate in the 2017 Womanpalooza, which is an online conference that's focused on ADHD and women. I'm pretty excited. I was one of the presenters at that conference last year and will be again this year. You can learn more about it by going to ADHDpalooza, PALOOZA.com. It's from February the 6th to the 11th. There's a lot of great speakers, and I encourage you to check it out. Chad is children and adults with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, has been a long-term supporter of Attention Talk Radio, and tonight's show is actually being brought to you by Chad, and they've got a quick tip for you, so let's share that with you.
Children with ADHD can be prone to overstimulation. The holidays can be especially stressful. Know your child's limits and select holiday activities wisely. Make sure there is a quiet space where your child can go and regroup. Choose calmness over chaos. For more tips on making the holidays work for you, visit the CHAD website at www.help4adhd.org. That's www.help4adhd.org.
Again, thank you for Chad for your support. If you're not familiar with Chad, you should become familiar. It's a great not-for-profit organization and something that you should be a member of. There are lots of member benefits and member services, but most importantly is they advocate on behalf of the ADHD community. So that's a big deal. Tonight's show, I'm very excited about. I want to do something on this a really long time. I think there's some misunderstandings about what motivation really is. With us tonight is Dr. Ari Tuchman. He's a clinical psychologist who specializes in diagnosing and treating children, teens, and adults with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. He's the author of three books, Understand Your Brain, Get More Done, the ADHD Executive Functions Workbook, More Attention, Less Deficit, which is one of my favorite. That's a success strategy for adults with ADHD, and Integrative Treatment for Adults ADHD, a practical, easy-to-use guide for clinicians. He's a frequent speaker. And frequent is really kind of an understatement. He's given more than 300 presentations on ADHD and other topics. He's got over 100 episodes, more than 2 million downloads on More Attention, Less Deficit podcast. He's a member of the National Board of CHAD. Actually, he's an employee of CHAD that makes no money, and he part-time is a psychologist. To get more information about Dr. Tuchman, go to adultadhdbook.com. And before we get into it, Dr. Tuchman, you were the chair of the last – or co-chair of the last 2 years of the CHAD conference, and I have to hand it to you. You did a spectacular job. I was blown away with how well things went this last year in California. So thanks for putting it on.
Yeah, no, my pleasure. And there are a lot of other good people. Well, actually, there weren't a lot. There were sort of a small number of other very good people who did a lot of the work as well. So I'll only take marginal credit for that.
Oh, we'll give you a lot of credit. You can call it marginal. We'll give you a lot of credit because we know, Chad, your full-time job.
Right.
So everybody, Ari's one of my favorites to come on. I got to know him a couple years ago, and we started doing some shows, and he's like my go-to guy on we start talking about topics that are just practical-type things where we dig behind things a little bit. We're not dealing sometimes with book definitions. We're talking about how things actually work, and I love him because he's a psychologist by trade, so we come from different backgrounds, but oftentimes we find a little differences, but we kind of meet in the middle. So tonight's show, when I thought about, I wanted to talk about motivation, and I forget who it was. Somebody sparked this by saying, you never did it, and maybe it was Dr. Olivardia, I can't remember, but he said, you've never done anything that you weren't motivated to do. And I know Dr. Tuchman said that if you weren't motivated, you'd be dead. And that sent me off on a thought process and a journey of trying to understand motivation And Dr. Tuckman agreed to kind of come on tonight to talk about this. And so, Dr. Tuckman, I want to just start this off by asking you, what is motivation to you?
So I think motivation involves some sort of desire. I think it's a desire either for more of something good or a desire for less of something bad. So I think we can be motivated towards a reward or away from a punishment.
That makes some sense to me. So is motivation like kind of organic? I mean, if it's a drawing to something that's good or pleasurable or away from something that's pain, is that just organic? Is it just built into us?
It absolutely is. And certainly, I mean, there are some things that are naturally built in. So like, you know, a hunger drive or a thirst drive are absolutely built into us because biologically they keep us alive as organisms. So, it's kind of sparks us to action, to seek food or to seek water when we need it. But then we have other, I guess technically they're not drives, but other motivations that for things that are more kind of psychological, they're more perhaps personal, that some things are appealing, more appealing to me and less appealing, you know, to other people. So we have these kind of individual motivations as well. So it gets a little bit more complicated, but it definitely does start at that very basic biological level. And then it goes, you know, sort of up, up, up to loftier things like, I don't know, believing that there should be some justice in the world or something like that, which is a much more kind of theoretical, conceptual kind of an idea.
So let me ask you just what role does dopamine play, that neurotransmitter, with regard to motivation from your perspective?
So I think that, you know, so that it's interesting because there are some folks who've said that, you know, ADHD is really like – it's a motivation deficit disorder, and specifically that it's a disorder in being motivated to do things that aren't very interesting. And, you know, we know that folks with ADHD, that dopamine, particularly like in the prefrontal cortex, is kind of a big piece of what's going on there with ADHD. So I think dopamine does sort of fit into this, and stuff that, I mean, this is really kind of simplistic, but stuff that kind of jacks up our dopamine is more interesting, it's more exciting, more appealing, will tend to be more motivating compared to the things that kind of bring our dopamine down. But, you know, that's a very, very simplistic way of talking about, you know, the extremely complex nervous system.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm a simple guy, so I'm going to break it down in terms I can understand. And I'm bringing this up because I did an interview with Dr. Kenneth Bloom about a year and a half ago about dopamine, and I said – it was kind of funny because it just came to me just before we went on air, and I threw it past him, but I asked him right after coming, I said, Dr. Bloom, are we addicted to drugs or are we addicted to dopamine? And in an interviewer's life, when somebody goes, actually, that's a really good question, I've never been asked that, it's like the coup de grace for me. And he said, like,
right,
that's actually good. He said, but, you know, something, you're right, not that I said it, but I inferred it, is that we're actually addicted to dopamine and that the drugs that people take impact the level of dopamine. So like nicotine and cocaine, he said like an orgasm is straight dopamine. And he started talking about, you know, it's sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and music actually elicits dopamine. And as we talked about it, it's the reward neurotransmitter. And he had coined the phrase back in the late 70s, the reward deficit syndrome, to be an umbrella thing for people that struggle with dopamines. And there's ADHD is under that umbrella, substance abuse, eating disorders, and all that kind of stuff. And it sent me off fascinating, which is a part and parcel leading to the show, is that if those with ADHD struggle with the level of dopamine and there's a connection between that and motivation, then it's interesting because it's, if you're doing something and it elicits dopamine in your brain, then you're motivated and you pay attention to it. And if you don't get that and you're not, again, I'm oversimplifying the brain, that would seem to explain a lot. Thoughts?
Yeah, no, I think that fits. You know, I think that, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll are a means to an end, you know, and in this case, the end is different levels of dopamine, you know, that they're a way of kind of changing your dopamine levels, so to speak. So, but, you know, it creates a situation then that, as with all sort of human abilities, there's this kind of, you know, there's a range or a spectrum or a bell curve or whatever. And some people are kind of acutely attuned. Their dopamine levels are very acutely attuned to the rewards that are available in the world around them. And they are then motivated to do the things that they need to do. Whereas other people are less sensitive to that, and they're less, therefore, less motivated, and they don't do as much. So, you know, if you get a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a thrill or a jolt from, you know, checking an item completed off of your to-do list, if that is motivating to you, that's a great asset to have, actually. That's a great quality to have, because, you know, it will make it easier for you to sort of plow through that otherwise uninteresting stuff that needs to be done. Or if you get great pleasure out of a neat stack of filed papers or something, you know, that's a great quality to have. I mean, it may not make you the life of the party, but you're going to definitely get a bunch of things done. You know, by contrast, if you get zippo from that, if that does nothing for you, then you're going to struggle much more with those types of tasks, because it takes a much more Herculean amount of motivation to plow your way, to slog your way through these otherwise completely uninteresting or even painful tasks that you need to do.
So, and this is, I want to throw this disclaimer out there a little bit, because the more you're talking, the more I really kind of, I'm going to share kind of some of my thoughts, and everybody out there, Ari's the smart one. I'm just the knucklehead that interviews the smart guys to try to figure it out on my own. So I'd pay more attention to what he's doing. But in one sense, I'm going to kind of talk a little bit about some of my thoughts and the connections, because I do think there's an interesting thing here with dopamine. And everybody, I don't have to be right. This is really to help you guys out there kind of sort through motivation and to be able to manage it. Because I think when people just look at somebody with ADHD and say they're not motivated, I think they're missing the boat. I think they are motivated. Just because they're not doing what you want them to do doesn't mean it. So with that being said, a second ago, Dr. Tuckman, you talked about ways of changing the dopamine level. And all of a sudden, what cropped in my mind is what I call manufactured motivation. So organic motivation would be the stuff that you talked about, hunger, thirst, a sex drive, et cetera. And I'm going to highlight sex drive, because that's just a dopamine rush. But changing ways of dopamine levels, to me, is manufactured motivation. And that's when you give yourself a reward for doing something. So I wouldn't ordinarily do it, but I'm going to create that reward system to manufacture the desire to go through this to get to that reward. What do you think of that concept?
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely true. I think that we do that all the time. You know, that there are certain things that are kind of primary motivators, like food, water, sex, you know, comfortable situations. You know, those are kind of primary motivators, but I don't know. I mean, how much of your day do you go through and do stuff because someone's going to give you food, water, or sex, you know? So, I mean, probably not that much of it. You know, you don't work for your lunch directly. So it becomes a situation then that we create these associations that if I do this, then it will lead to that, to that, to that, and that is the thing that will make me feel good. Or, you know, my boss saying, hey, great job, makes me feel good. So that is then motivating for me to do it. So we can absolutely then use that to kind of manufacture motivation. And we do it all the time, like you said. You know, like if I do, once I finish this thing I don't really want to do, then I will let myself do that more enjoyable thing afterwards. We totally do this with our kids. You know, once you eat your vegetables, then you can have your dessert. So, you know, we're playing with the circumstances of the other person or ourselves in order to create a more motivating kind of a situation when this thing itself is not sufficiently motivating inherently.
Yep. So I want you to hold that thought. I'm going to go to a break. And before I do, when we come back, I'm going to talk about an observation that I've had of myself with regard to motivation. It's just kind of interesting. And before, just remember everybody that, well, actually I'm going to kind of back up. what I find fascinating to me is how motivated I can be when somebody has an insight. So when Dr. Bloom goes, that's interesting, nobody's ever asked me that question before, but that's really good, that just sends me through the – I get so jacked up over that. Or Ari, like when I'll send you an idea for the show and you go, wow, I never really thought about that before, that'd be really, really pretty cool. And we get on a riff and I'm like, when I get those from you, I'm just like so jacked up. It's like a really cool thing. So we're going to go to break. We'll come back and pick up where we left off on that. Everybody got to learn more about Dr. Tuckman at his website at adultadhdbook.com. And with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an EDGE Foundation coach, specifically trained to help students with ADHD and Executive Function Challenge make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more or call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE to get your free college success guide.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Managing ADHD is about pausing before you ponder and proceed. This opportunity to practice pausing is being brought to you by digcoaching.com. The Attention Talk Network has over 450 interviews and more than 210 hours of programming, which is overwhelming if you think about it. That's why I've made my list top 10 favorite Attention Talk radio interviews. Download the list at www.digcoaching.com/ATR.
And now back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. We're here with Dr. Tuckman having a great conversation and discovery conversation on motivation. And Dr. Cutman, before the break, I was talking about my own personal experience and as a coach and trying to help people understand motivation and their passions and their gifts and stuff. I began to notice is that I'm highly, highly, highly motivated for the pursuit of paying attention to attention. And when I can look at something a certain way and somebody has an aha and they didn't see that before, it's just like crack cocaine for me to the point in time where I'm motivated to do a ton of stuff that I do in coaching. I have a hard time stopping for it because it's like I'm addicted to it. And earlier you were talking about hunger, thirst, and sex, and you don't do everything. But it's kind of funny because in my job, all I do all day long is try to help people have those ahas in coaching. Now, I don't know what it is, but I'm just really trying to help them shift their attention. And literally, I find it intoxicating. I have a hard time putting it down and walking away from it. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's a great example of this sort of individuality of what's motivating. You know, that for you, those are great moments, and that is what motivates you to do all the other things related to your coaching business that are not as interesting, you know, so that you can connect the fact that if I do these less interesting things, then I get more of those really awesome times. And, you know, just, and of course, it's all individual. I mean, I love presenting. I love getting up in front of an audience. I love sitting down and, you know, banging away on PowerPoint and putting slides together and all that stuff. My wife hates it. You know, like,
yep.
She does not understand why I get off on that. But that's okay. You know, like, we all have our thing. So,
yep.
You know, and I think that, so I think that this kind of brings up a situation, you know, when we talk about motivation and then when we talk about distractions, that, you know, it's kind of a common thing that this is more kind of like parents looking at kids, like, you know, when their kids are getting distracted. You know, a distraction is something that is seen as less important than the other thing that you should be paying attention to. But, of course, that's in the eye of the beholder. So if you're kid is sitting and screwing around with his pencil and whatever rather than doing his homework, you as the parent or the teacher would say, that kid is distracted because clearly the pencil is less important and therefore should be less motivating than the homework is. But if you ask the kid, they may have a completely different idea of what's important and therefore what's motivating. The homework is not important to them, perhaps. So they wouldn't necessarily say that they're distracted. Or a better example is if they're texting their friends. In that case, texting their friends is way more motivating than doing the homework. So in their estimation, they're not distracted. They're actually paying attention to the right thing because the friends are way more important than the homework
is. Yep.
So I think that a lot of arguments about distraction are really fundamentally, they're more about what's important and what's motivating to this person versus what somebody else would like to be motivating to them.
Yeah, and so I want this is really kind of, you're hitting on the epicenter why I want to do the show, and I want to say exactly what you said. I just want to change it a little bit and word it a little bit differently. It's kind of funny because years ago, because you said distractions is really in the eyes of the beholder. If you have if you're the teacher, right, and you're sitting there teaching math class, and young Johnny's looking outside at butterflies or watching a cockroach run across the floor, well, he's distracted. At the same time, I could turn that around and say that kid is actually curious about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the opposite side of the same coin, but as you had articulated very well, it's in the judgment of this is in the eyes of the beholder, and what everybody sees is the distractibility of the kid. As funny as a coach, I'm looking for the curiosity. That's the other side. It's literally the same thing in a way. It's just two different coins. And again, I'm going to say that curiosity might be that dopamine rush where that person's kind of moving to that area. But one of the reasons to have the show is everybody says is just because person's not doing what you're doing, you got to say, listen, that's in your eyes of your beholder. You might need to change it around a little bit and look at it from a different angle to be able to do something, and go back to what I had described earlier is writing is the most painful thing for me to do on this particular planet. And I'm motivated to do this. And I was motivated the first time because I want to write an article, and I reached out to you and we wrote an article on, boredom, which we'll touch on a little bit later, which is the first time I was able to. And since that point in time, I've done it. I've never done anything like that before, but I was motivated to do that because of my passion and this other thing. So now I'm combining what I loved, like I get the juice, if you will, from the aha. And now I would never write anything, but I am, as you say, ways of changing dopamine levels by, all right, I'm going to work with you to write that. Now I'm able to do stuff that I wouldn't have never dreamed that I would do. Matter of fact, I actually have a old teacher I go back, and who'd have figured I'd get published for writing an article? And they're just laughing like never in a million years. But the point really here is to highlight that's the trick is if you can find out what I'm getting my juice and you manipulate that environment, I can then use what I am motivated to do to get around what I struggle with. Which is the trick, because it's not easy to understand that. The hard part is just saying that person's just not motivated and they should try harder,
right.
Which is what I'm hoping to get everybody inspired to be thinking about and look at motivation a little bit differently. Because, again, if you're not doing your homework and you're watching Netflix, then you're motivated to watch Netflix.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, and that you're kind of pulling the wrong levers by saying, well, they're just not motivated, or they should just try harder to be motivated by this thing that they're not motivated by, you know, as opposed to looking at the situation saying, well, what will it take to get them motivated? You know, how do we change the circumstances here? How do we adjust things so that they, in fact, will feel motivated to do this thing that they otherwise don't want to do?
So what's interesting to me is I love what you just said. I want to highlight something. Is if you're working with a kid with ADHD, really the trick is to be really creative and try to figure out how you can create that environment where you can use things that they're motivated to do. So we've all heard of that incredible teacher that have these clever ideas that make learning easy for kids.
Mm-hmm.
But that requires a lot of effort and a lot of creativity on the person to create that environment, which is hard.
Yeah.
Not everybody has that creativity. What do you think of that?
No, I agree. And I think that with the really great teachers, it's not just about, you know, let me write you a list of all my great ideas and then you can apply them. I think that there's a lot there in the sort of unspoken interpersonal, that those teachers can create a relationship with the kids in the class, that they bring them along for the ride, that it's not
yep.
just that they make everyone wear silly hats and then the kids will, you know, do the homework, but that they can draw them in and they can sort of, it's like that their interest and their motivation is infectious, you know, that they can kind of infect other people with it, so to speak, or they can sweep them along for the ride, so that, you know, they can supplement the kids' insufficient motivation by adding in some of their own.
This reminds me of a show we did with Dr. Sidney Zintal years ago. She's a professor at Purdue University. She's an educator, and she was at a CHAD presentation, doing a presentation. She was talking about, you know, when you're working with ADHD kids in the classroom and you're telling a story, you just can't tell the story. You got to amp it up. So it's not the kid, you know, the kid picked his nose. It's the kid got his finger up to the third knuckle. And he was
right.
wiggling around and came out with this booger that was about 3 feet long. It was green and slimy. And the way she described it is you're increasing the drama of it all and the stimulation, which is what would enable the kids to kind of pay attention to the story, what would ordinarily be a relatively boring story. And I tell that story because, one, it's illustrating the extreme that you've got to go to pique that interest and the outside of the box that you have to do. And when you do that, oftentimes those with ADHD, because you're using that drama, if you will, as a hook to bring them in so that they can focus as opposed to more of a monotone story.
Right. Yeah, I think that, you know, that whether it's something like that or kind of the example of the dynamic teacher who can kind of draw the kids in, I think that what they're doing is they're adding other motivators. So
yep.
to, you know, so the drama is motivating. Ooh, this is interesting. I want to find
yep.
out where this goes, so I'm going to pay attention. That it's easier to pay attention to that interesting stuff than it would be to pay attention to something that's just kind of dull and monotone.
Yep.
So, or, you know, wanting to kind of like be there with the teacher, so to speak, as they're kind of, you know, telling the story and kind of being a part of it, is like, that's the thing that's motivating. So, you know, or the whole like whistle while you work, you know, like that
yep.
old chestnut, you know, it's,
yep.
it doesn't change the work. Like, the work is still exactly the same, but the whistling, you feel better about the whistling. You kind of enjoy the whistling, and that makes the work itself less painful. So therefore it's, you know, you're more motivated to just kind of push your way through it. But I think that, you know, so we can increase the motivation on, you know, like, I think the example of the, you know, the kid who's texting his friends rather than doing his homework, we can either make the homework more motivating, or we can make the texting less motivating, or take the texting away. And then, you know, so perhaps, like, if it's a competition between doing homework and texting your friends, you know, in that scenario, the homework might lose every time. But if you take the texting away, then it becomes a question of doing homework versus, I don't know, what else can I do here? You know, so we can sometimes reduce some of the noise, so to speak, by taking out some of the competing options.
Yep, yep.
Or find ways to sweeten the deal, to make it, you know, so that the homework doesn't feel quite so onerous. And, you know, it may be that, you know, if the problem is not necessarily just that the homework is boring, but the homework is really hard, or there's anxiety about, I suck at this, I'm not going to do well, I hate not doing well, I'm not even going to try.
Yep.
Yep. You know, clearly that's going to be demotivating. So, you know, maybe the sweetening the deal involves, let's go through a few of these problems and see how you do, or you start it, I'll be here to help you if you get stuck. So then it's less kind of less daunting,
yep.
and then it's easier to get over that hump to do it. Or more immediate consequences. So it's not just, you know, here, do your homework, and if at the end of the year, 9 months from now, you have all A's and B's, we'll give you $1,000. You know, like, that is not motivating 9 months away. It's motivating
yep.
a week away,
yep.
maybe a month away, but depending on the kid, you know, so more immediate consequences for everybody tends to be much more much more motivating, gets people into action more easily.
So we need to go to a break again here in a second, but it's kind of funny because I coined this phrase a couple of while, as a coach, Ari, I help people trying to witness their attention in their brain, if they will, in their natural habitat. And when we watch their natural pattern attentions, our job is to beat their brain at its own game. And so I describe that as I there's countless people with ADHD that struggle with repetitive and boring routine tasks. And I do a lot, I've done a lot of presentations on exercise because it's a repetitive and boring routine task. And so I said, you know, what's interesting is that if you bring interest to the table, people usually do it. And exercise is much more social. And I won't go into the details with it, but I find that a majority of people, when they ever exercised, it was in a social environment. And if you can recognize that, the focus isn't on exercise, it's a social environment, because that becomes primary, because that's what you're motivating and interested in, and the exercise actually kind of happens as a result of it. So that said, I want to go to a break, and when we come back, Ari and I have done some shows on boredom, and I want to talk about boredom in the context of motivation. And then something I learned from you, Ari, that I'm still wrestling with, it was brilliant, the role arousal plays in motivation and kind of boredom. So when we come back, we'll explore that a little bit. Everybody, learn more about Dr. Tuckman by going to adultadhdbook.com. And with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You can't go off to college with them, but we can. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more how an EDGE coach can help your student reach their full potential. You can also call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE and get a free college success guide.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
The Attention Talk Network has over 450 interviews and more than 210 hours of programming, which is overwhelming if you think about it. That's why I've made my list top 10 favorite Attention Talk radio interviews. Download the list at www.digcoaching.com/ATR.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. We're having a spectacular conversation with Dr. Tuckman on motivation. We've covered a lot of ground. Before the break, I was talking about kind of backtracking and kind of like bringing in some other interviews that we've had, Ari, on boredom and what I've learned about kind of arousal. And before we kind of get into that, I really want to tell a story. Because I started my journey on boredom from an article somebody had gave me, and then you and I kind of talked about it, and it kind of unfolded, and I started giving some presentations. And I was at a CHAD conference doing a thing on boredom, and I was explaining about it and the different kinds of boredom. And agitated boredom is the boredom that those with ADHD are more susceptible to. And the definition of it's fascinating. It's a physical discomfort where a person is motivated to escape the plight. And I stop and I say they're physically uncomfortable. And they're going to do something in order to get comfortable again. And so this presentation I was giving was like, think about like poison ivy. You got it, and you're uncomfortable, and you're going to scratch that itch. You know you shouldn't do it, but you're going to do it because it gets you to kind of comfortable. So I'm explaining all this kind of stuff, and when it's over with, this woman walks up to me. She's, again, I love the aha, and she's looking like, I get it now. I said, really? She said, what? I said, so I got called by the principal to come to his school where my son was, and he brought my son in, and he said, what happened today in class? Because apparently he got in trouble, and he says, I don't know, it was just boring. He said, then what happened? He says, I don't know, I'm here. And she said, that explained what was going on. He was so bored. He was in the principal. He didn't even know why, because he got up and mooned the class. And I say this because those with ADHD, when they're bored, I talk about this a lot, and many of them can identify with it. I'm physically uncomfortable, and they'll do anything to seek that parity, that equilibrium. And the moment the kid gets up and drops his pants and moons the class, there's this rush that kind of comes over, and he kind of gets this reward. So
he was so bored, he was motivated to do something he probably knew that he shouldn't do, but he couldn't help himself anyway. And I find those when they're bored with ADHD, they start pushing buttons. There's another guy I coached one time who was Italian, and I'm trying to whittle this thing down. He found himself in an argument every time the holidays were kind of came around. He's like, after coaching, we realized as he's sitting around a table, it's boring after 4 hours. He'd either get drunker and cooter brown, or he'd start arguing with somebody, and he would get that rush, that debate. It was a negative experience. Of course, and we figured this where he'd play Sudoku under the table, so he loved the Sudoku for whatever reason, and that kind of kept him at bay. But that motivation, that notion that sometimes people are motivated by things that are not so obvious, like they're bored, and they do these things, they can't help themselves. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it has to do with, it's sort of like maximizing the present versus maximizing the future. You know, so eating healthy is about benefiting you in the future, although I suppose in the present you can feel good about yourself for eating healthy, as opposed to, you know, scarfing down bacon cheeseburgers is about maximizing the pleasure of the moment. So, you know, I think that the kid who was bored in class and mooned everyone was motivated to do something about his present discomfort, but didn't pause long enough or wasn't convinced enough by the future consequences. And, you know, same with your client who would sort of start up start up trouble. It made it better in the moment, for him at least.
Yep.
But then it undoubtedly had some future consequences. So, so I think that, you know, and this is like a whole nother discussion of is that, you know, balance between the making the most of the present versus benefiting ourselves in the future, and that, you know, for a lot of folks with ADHD, this brings in kind of the concept of time horizon, that things that are farther off, are not motivating to them, and things that are in the same reward or punishment that's farther out in time is less motivating. So, like, you know, a simple example would be, you know, if I said to you, you know, I need someone to, you know, mow my lawn, it'll only take you 20 minutes, but it'll give you $100 to do it. You know, a lot of people would say, well, for $100, like that's $300 an hour for a 20-minute job.
Yep.
Sure, I'll mow it for $100. But then if I said, so here's the deal, I want you to mow my lawn, same 20-minute mow job,
yep,
but I'm going to give you $100 a year from now. Right,
yep.
Same $100, exactly like that. I could take the same bill and stick it in an envelope and say, 1 year from now, absolutely guaranteed, you will get this $100. And all of a sudden, it's a lot less motivating. So, what's motivating, or so stuff happening right now in this moment, is much more motivating than delayed rewards or punishments. So, so when we talk about what's motivating, we also then need to take time into account. Is it, you know, something that happens sooner, or is it something that happens later? So, you know, like I gave the example of if you get all A's,
yep,
and B's, you get $1,000 at the end of the year. What would be way more motivating is to say, you know, if you get all A's and B's every month, you will get, well, $111 or whatever, $110 at the end, and it adds up to exactly the same $1,000. Or better yet, you're going to get $25 every week that you get all A's and B's. And even better than that, you will get $5 every Monday to Friday that you have all A's and B's. Again, exactly the same $1,000. But that, in that circumstance of $5 every day, is a million times more motivating than $1,000 at the end of the year.
So I love exactly what you said. I'm going to say what you said, but I'm going to do it in a completely different way, just for grins and giggles, because the idea of this show is to get people to think. So I look at it this way, is if the ADHD kid's a dopamine junkie, okay, they're addicted to dopamine, and they're going to get their fix, it's about self-regulation. So if you're going to give them $100 to mow the lawn right now, I get my crack cocaine right now, and I'm good to go. But if I've got to wait for a year, I'm not getting my fix right now. I'm going to go do something else to go get my fix, because I'm not going to wait that long, because I want my fix right now. And so we start talking about that point of performance that Dr. Barclay talks about and bringing it in. And I'm saying the same – I'm using the word self-regulation because it's really about self-regulation, the ability to pause and put that off until the future. But no, I want the reward right now. I want the crack. I want that now. And if I don't get it right now, I'm going to go find something to get it right now. To me, it's kind of like this blueprint that you can begin to predict what those with ADHD are going to do. And then you can kind of like start working their environment, and it will explain why that reward of $1,000, you know, a year from now is not going to work, because it's got to be brought back to the present. So you're almost like kind of leading the manufacturer reward down the path to kind of take them to kind of where they want to go. Again, I think we're getting to the same endpoint, Dr. Tuckman. I'm just describing it a little bit differently, at least into that in the vernacular. So,
I agree. I think that, you know, it's going to be much more, rather than telling people you should be motivated about this thing that you're not motivated. I mean, I suppose you could try to explain it to them, you know, if you do homework, you'll get better grades, and this will then lead to better college options, something, something. You know, like maybe you can kind of convince them, or you should eat healthier because then you'll be in better shape and you won't die of a heart attack too early, blah, blah, blah. You know, so you can try, but probably much more motivating is going to be changing the circumstances, you know, or as you say, manufacturing the motivation, rather than trying to force the thing that clearly isn't working.
So I have to tell this story. Years ago, my oldest son was 15. And I'm a coach, Ari. I mean, you're dealing with this environment. I don't know about you, but at some point in time, when you got a 15-year-old, you're screaming at him. You're breaking all the rules that they tell you that you're supposed to do. But just because you just get to the, I don't know really what to do. And one day I'm sitting there and I catch myself and I'm ranting and raving. And I go, why am I doing this? And I looked at my son and it hit me like a ton of bricks. Like, he's going through puberty. His body, his brain has released all these hormones, and his body's changing, and his mind is changing. He's intoxicated. How stupid am I? I'm screaming at a drunk. And it was that, in that moment that I just kind of backed up a little bit and said, what are you doing? I mean, this is just stupid. And so I was able to downregulate, and you know, he was always intoxicated, but I wait for those times to be a little bit more sober to kind of talk some sense into it. And I'm telling the story that it's crazy for me to be screaming at a drunk. But that rationalization of, if you go do this, you're going to get to college, it's kind of like you're trying to ask somebody to self-regulate who has a hard time with self-regulation. Like, are you really serious? You really think that you're just going to explain it to them and magically it's going to happen? It's like an exercise in insanity, whereas if you go, hey, listen, I need to focus on the environmental things so that they can step into it and let that do its job. So if there's those incentive and those things in the moment, it will happen. Just like my older son doesn't have ADHD, but he's never planned anything until he had a girlfriend who planned less than he did. So they weren't going to get anything done unless he planned it. So then the motivation came.
Right.
Anyway, I'm just kind of playing with that stuff. We don't have a lot of time, but there's another concept I want to go to, because I'm out to lunch on this, and I'm really anxious for you to teach me something, because we did a show on the boredom thing and motivation, and we talked about arousal, and I didn't understand it. But what I took from that conversation is, to do anything that you're ordinarily motivated to do, you actually have to be aroused to do that. And it was fascinating, because I began to realize when I've been studying boredom is those with ADHD, or when you're bored, you're not even aroused to do what you would ordinarily do. Because you say, when somebody's bored, you say, what do you want to do? They can't even tell you what they want to do. So talk to me about what your more thoughts about arousal and its play into this, because it's, to me, it's like that fire, that match that sparks the fire for you to do stuff.
Right. So, you know, arousal is part of attention, and it's basically like one way of thinking about it. It's kind of like the fuel that attention runs on. And, you know, I think that it's most clear if you think about, you know, in the morning, after, you know, once you're up and moving, you've had a shower, you've had some coffee, maybe you've worked out or something, and you've got, you know, plenty of sort of mental energy to pay attention to things and to do stuff and to work hard and to exert your willpower and do the right thing and all of that. In contrast, think about at the end of the night. Now, end of the night, however you define that, if you're a morning person or a night owl, but, you know, but at the end of the night, where you're kind of running on fumes, and it's much harder to read the same boring passage than it would have been in the morning. And, you know, you just have less of that willpower to kind of keep going. And instead, we tend to drift more into, like, other things we shouldn't be doing, or more passive activities like Well, I was going to keep sorting papers for my taxes, but I guess I'm just going to watch TV instead. And, you know, so it's like we have less of that drive to do that stuff that we should be doing. We're less motivated to do the hard stuff, and we're more motivated to just passively do the easier stuff. So, you know, so certainly arousal then can be increased with stuff like caffeine, but mm-hmm. also by having good company, by being excited about the thing that you're doing, by having music on, if that helps you, by, I don't know, like having that, I don't know, whatever. I mean, there's sort of ways to kind of increase
yep.
our level of arousal, and certainly by getting enough sleep, by generally eating healthy, by generally, you know, exercising, that increases your level of arousal as well. So there are things that we can do that may not be specific to the task, but can increase
yep.
our level of arousal and our motivation to push through at times when we might otherwise be less motivated to do it.
So I have no idea. I'm just when you were saying that, I began to like wander off and think about people that are depressed.
Yes.
Because I don't do a lot of work in this space, but because a lot of times those with ADD will come with a diagnosis, particularly women, of depression, and then you find out
mm-hmm.
they got diagnosed later.
Yeah.
But it's almost kind of like they. It seems to me there's a relationship, because if you're depressed, you don't even have that arousal to
yeah.
get to the motivation.
You got less fuel in the tank.
And that's the trick, is you're trying to ignite that arousal to get them to motivate what they normally do, which is not an easy thing.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, this is why I spend a fair amount of time with clients talking about that basic self-care stuff of sleep, diet, and exercise. That, you know, because a lot of the times, if they're not managing those things well, and this is certainly easier said than done, but if they're not managing those things well, it's kind of draining away some of their arousal and motivation and willpower before the day has even begun, you know? So by working on that, by helping people do better with that stuff, it gives them more to work with for all the rest of what then they need to do.
Yeah, so I call that meds. Actually, I stole that from Brett Thornhill.
Hmm.
He's a coach in California. It's meditation, exercise, diet, and sleep.
Nice.
And you know, we did an interview with Dr. Rady, who said, you know, basically exercise is the body's most natural antidepressant. So exercise is kind of key to that. Diet certainly kind of plays into that. I love Dr. Olivardi's stuff. Is like sleep is like defragged for the brain.
Right.
It kind of helps put everything back so you can find it. And mindfulness is actually kind of pausing and kind of getting there. So I can certainly see how that plays into it. So, well, I, as much as I could go on for forever, we've got to wrap this up a little bit. So as we close this out, Dr. anything, any last thoughts, tips, or anything we need to do before we close this?
You know, I think I'm going to come back to a point that we've sort of made repeatedly, but it's that, you know, if you can't change someone's motivation about the task itself, then I think it's, you know, going to be much more effective to find other ways to kind of supplement that motivation by tying that task to other things or changing some of the circumstances about it. So, you know, that just, it tends to work better rather than just kind of continuing to push and say, I should be motivated or someone else should be motivated by the thing that they're just not motivated by. So let's kind of call a spade and then focus instead on the things that we can do to make it better.
Yeah. So I'm going to go out on a limb here, and watching motivation over a long period of time is that, in the absence of creativity, there's this push-pull. The person with ADHD who doesn't seem to be motivated, the onus is like, you're not motivated, you need to go do something about it. But the success I've seen is when the support system actually works with that person and says, this is not about you trying harder, it's about us trying to be creative and trying to design an environment that actually has those natural manufactured incentives for you to kind of get through that. So we're all going to work together to build that environment. And just to saying that child isn't motivated, to me, That was the purpose of the show, is they actually are motivated, even though they're not doing what you want them to do, or your spouse isn't doing what you do, they're motivated to do whatever they're doing. So rather than just bully them and push that on there, let's be a part of the solution, back up and say, let's kind of be creative and look for things, as opposed to just pushing all the work off on them, because if it was easy, they would have done it by now. So
right. But it's also, I mean, I'll steal a line from Bob Brooks, but it's sort of like, you know, who isn't learning here? You know, like, you know, you can say this kid isn't motivated, but the thing, the stuff that you're doing isn't working, so why do you keep doing it? You know, what about doing something different?
I love that quote. That's a spectacular quote. So with that, we ought to wrap it all up. So, Dr. Tuckman, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hey, it's always a pleasure.
Everybody, go to adultadhdbook.com. Check out his podcast. Check out his books. Check out his stuff. If you're in Pennsylvania and need some help, go check him out. Philly area, right?
Yes, indeed. Outside of Philly.
Go seek him out. He's a great guy. So catch us next week for another great edition of Attention Talk Radio. Take care.